To Win, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent. And caregivers that work for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its co-workers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep-pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art, because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once, buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. This holiday season, jewelry's best-kept secret is revealed. Discover fine quality diamonds at Sam's Club. Whether you're shopping for home or business, count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, they're popping out all over the place. The appearance of impropriety, actually people charging impropriety, from Bev Harris down in Florida with Volusia County with the great struggle over the garbage bag. That CNN videotaped, apparently, and the multiple lawsuits now that Black Box Voting has filed against electoral, against what do you call these? They're not filing them against the Secretary of State. They're the commissions, the county, you know, the folks in the government agencies who are responsible for giving us clean elections who aren't. And she also has lawsuits against two of the voting machine companies that have just recently been filed. Just talking about her, talking with her a little earlier this morning. That news going on. You can find it. Just go to blackboxvoting.org. It's all right there. And John Conyers. Yesterday he made Keith Olbermann. Of course, he had those hearings in Ohio a couple days ago. The ranking Democrat, this is Keith Olbermann writes this, the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee told us tonight on Countdown that he and others in Congress are considering formally challenging the slate of electors who cast Ohio's votes when those votes are opened and counted before a joint session of Congress on January 6th. Of course, Conyers was on this program, what, 3 weeks ago? I think it was. We had John Conyers on, and I said, John, you know, or Congressman Conyers, why should we have any private corporation handling our votes and then telling us that we have no right to see how they're doing it? And he said something to the effect of, you know, those, your words should be enshrined. It's quite a high compliment, I thought, but he's right. I, not that my words should be enshrined, but he's right that there is something very, very wrong with a democratic process that is not transparent and yet claims to be democratic. This is not about who won or lost an election. This is about the fact that for 6 years now, solidly for 6 years, moderately for 8 or 10 years, we have had elections where we the people have no idea what really happened to our votes. And it isn't right. It just plain old flat out isn't right. John Conyers told Keith Olbermann, the fact that the Republicans didn't join us isn't our problem, it's their fault. One of the folks in our chat room noted a few minutes ago that the Republicans were saying, well, the Conyers didn't invite us. But I recall having watched him on, what was it, C-SPAN, I think, when the first day of his hearings there in Washington, D.C., saying, yes, we have invited them, and yes, they have not replied. He's also asked the FBI to get in on this because he has a sworn affidavit from an elections official in Hocking County, Ohio, that there was manipulation of the vote going on there at the level of the machines, and that she witnessed this, and that this company, Triad Systems or Triad, whatever it is, that was affiliated with it, had something to do. Actually, she's not alleging. Let me get this absolutely straight, because this is the media. She's alleging that she saw this guy come in and fiddle with the machine. Whether or not that was manipulation of the vote, we don't know. See, that's the question here. Why, and the president of the company is saying, well, we always fiddle with the machines before there's a recount. You've got to do that in order to get it. You know, apparently the recount is only for the presidential ballot, and so they've got to set up the machine so it doesn't spit out all the other ones, something like that. So maybe there's a perfectly acceptable explanation. Or maybe not. Richard Hayes Phillips, swear and affirm. This an affidavit, sworn affidavit from December 10th. He says, there are numerous examples of incorrect presidential vote tallies in certain precincts in Cleveland, Cuyahoga County. These irregularities include at least 16 precincts where voters intended to be cast for Kerry were shifted to other candidates' columns, and at least 30 precincts with inexplicably low voter turnout, including 7.1%. 13.05%, 19.6%, 21%, 21%, 24%, and 7 entire wards where voter turnout was reportedly below 50%, even as low as 39.35%. These all being precincts and wards that were heavily Kerry. So he concludes Kerry's margin of victory in just in Cleveland has been wrongly reduced by 22,000 votes. And then he goes on to say, it's in my professional opinion, there is compelling evidence of fraud in Miami County, Ohio. And goes through the detail. You read the details of this stuff in Toledo and Lucas County. It's just absolutely amazing. I'm sure you can find this on the web very easily. Just go to Google and plug in affidavit, which is spelled A-F-F-I-D-A-V-I-T, affidavit. And Richard Hayes Phillips, spelled pretty much like it sounds, H-A-Y-E-S-P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S. Put Richard Hayes Phillips in quotes, an affidavit. And that's not how I got this, but I would bet you almost anything you'd find it instantly. And no doubt the folks in our chat room will let us know. Welcome to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live all across the nation today. And streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Is George W. Bush choosing death over life with his economic plan? I'm going to get into that here in our first hour. In our second hour, in our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, today being Thursday, hey, let's double check that and make sure. What does my computer say? Yes, indeed, it's Thursday, December 16th. Today being Thursday, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Should Vermont secede from the Union? Our guest and founder of the Second Vermont Republic says, yes, the state of Vermont should remove itself from the United States immediately. So we'll find out what he has to say about that. We're going to get in the best of the rest of the news in the third hour of our program. For many Americans, this from the Center for Justice and Democracy, for many Americans, reforming our health care system is a matter of life or death. The Bush administration has decided to side with death and profits. The medical malpractice legislation the Bush advocated at yesterday's economic summit, the administration's solution to this country's vast health care problem, would take away legal protections that have saved thousands of lives. These laws have protected us from dangerous and defective drugs and medical devices like Vioxx, the Dalcon Shield, and Copper 7 IUDs, an antibiotic that caused cancer, oral contraceptives that caused life-threatening injuries, a pregnancy test that led to false positives for cancer, and many others, other products. Without these laws in place, drugs like Vioxx would still be sold and people would be hurt or killed. The administration's plan will result in Americans dying so that the drug companies can make more money, says the Center for Justice and Democracy. In the meantime, here's the story from the Associated Press. Tom Raum wrote, R-A-U-M wrote this. In today's newspaper, headline, Economic Forum opens with cheer. There's a photograph of George W. Bush with a big smile on his face. And the first two paragraphs of the story, an economy with blue skies, happy workers, and prosperity for all just around the corner. That's the sunny picture painted Wednesday at President Bush's economic conference, where nary a discouraging word was uttered, and Bush's second-term priorities were resoundingly praised. He goes on to note, on the opening day of Bush's choreographed two-day economic conference, moderators and participants alike sang praises of his first-term accomplishments and second-term agenda. His proposals, many still being formulated, were hailed as the remedy for what needs to be fixed. He points out that Larry Mocha, Tulsa, Oklahoma manufacturer of truck air brake systems, wonder how many of them are showing up on trucks in Iraq. I'll bet they're doing a booming business. Anyhow, he says, I want to thank the administration for all the positive things you've done for our economy. It hasn't always been this good. Treasury Secretary John Snow says, we're the envy of the world. Why is it then that people are talking about the European dream now rather than the American dream? The AARP was not represented. The American Retail Federation, which opposes moving to a national sales tax, was not represented. Trial lawyer groups were not represented. None of these concerns, none of these groups nor their concerns were represented at Bush's forums. And they note, while the economy does appear to be recovering, things are not as bright as participants suggested. Job creation remains anemic. Budget and trade deficits are at record highs. And a long slumping dollar threatens to drive up interest rates. This reminds me of a story that I first heard, must have been more than a decade ago. It's, I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's true. You can find it around the web. I've seen it in a bunch of different venues, but I'm pretty sure the first time I heard it was I was in Germany. It was about Khrushchev, Nikita Khrushchev, who more or less followed Stalin as the head of the Soviet Union. And after Stalin died and Khrushchev took power, and the crimes of Stalin, I mean, you know, he murdered tens of millions of people, of his own people, as well as others, were becoming apparent. It became acceptable and then even fashionable to criticize Stalin within certain boundaries. And Khrushchev was giving a speech to the assembled Soviet, you know, to the parliament or whatever they called that thing. I think it was called the Supreme Soviet. And he was criticizing Stalin. And, of course, Khrushchev had been part of that parliament during Stalin. And a voice from the audience pipes up and says, well, why didn't you make those statements when Stalin was alive? Why didn't you stop him? And Khrushchev stops in mid-speech, glares around the room, and says, who said that? And there's just absolute silence. And he pounds his fist on the desk. Who said that? Absolute silence. and he lets it draw out a little longer. And then finally he points out in the direction that the voice came from. And he said, "Now you know why I didn't speak up against Stalin." Well, nobody's speaking up against George W. Bush. They are making jokes, though. Home Depot, 1,500 stores. Since 1999, at least three customers and five workers have been killed in accidents in the stores. In 2002, the number of Occupational Health and Safety Administration violations at Home Depot jumped 45% over 2001. And yesterday, the head of Home Depot says, "What you have today is business on one side. You got the trial lawyers on the other side. You got deep pockets colliding with shallow principles." Robert Nardelli, the chief executive of Home Depot, said, to laughter from the audience and the president. Yes, let's laugh at those folks who die because of our safety violations. Isn't it just so funny? We just need to change these tort laws so that these little people can't sue us big corporations anymore. It just ain't right. Pain and suffering? Come on. George W. Bush, he chuckled and nodded as panelists at the two-day conference aired their contempt for trial lawyers. Isn't it great? 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream, man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Research. Look, a rabbit with wings. We do research. And the lemon that sings. So much research. There are so many things you can modify in nature. Markets. What it's really,
it's the GMO song.
Investors. While we're rushing things out to the public.
Yes.
We cannot let doubt that our goods are good.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Chuck in our chat room points out that George W. Bush, when his administration was charged with treason, had no problem quickly hiring a trial lawyer and saying...
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now... This is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Surrounded by a panel of enthusiastic supporters, Bush said lawsuits against businesses and manufacturers were a drag on the economy and must be reined in. He called for a new system to deal with asbestos-related cases, and they want to limit class-action lawsuits. Todd Smith, the president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, oh, those nasty trial lawyers. They only stand up for average people. They only stand up for the little guy. How dare they? I mean, you know, it's... Why can't they just all become corporate lawyers? Well, George W. does need one every now and again, but he needed a trial lawyer to sue Al Gore, you'll recall. Anyhow, Todd Smith, president of the Association of Trial Lawyers, says... President Bush unashamedly advocates legislation that would protect insurance industry profits and prohibit any punishment for the makers of dangerous drugs like Vioxx, while penalizing your mother for being abused in a nursing home or your daughter for having her baby killed by medical malpractice. That's not an economic plan. It's just another giveaway to the insurance, drug, HMO, and nursing home industries. End quote. The Center for Responsive Politics, the nonpartisan group that tracks campaign spenders, by the way, found that participants to yesterday's conference donated nearly $195,000 to various Republican candidates, including $40,000 to George W. Maybe that's why he was smiling so big. Well, the front page of today's Wall Street Journal gives us a little clue to what we might be able to expect when they take our Social Security money, which is now... being administered at a cost, an overhead cost, of about 1%. For every $100 that goes through Social Security, it costs about a penny to figure out who it should go to, when the check should get cut, mail the checks out, process them, keep the bank accounts, do the audits, make sure everything's running. It's just a very boring thing. You got a bunch of boring government bureaucrats in a boring way who are getting boring civil service salaries handling Social Security. And so it just costs a boring 1%. Well, wait till we give it to Wall Street. This from the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. Client comes first on Wall Street. It isn't always so. An article by Ann Davis. The subhead, investing own money, firms can misuse knowledge of big impending order, mischief in the back books. Here's the first paragraph. Ann, great. Very well-written article. When a mutual fund company asked brokerage firm Knight Securities to get its 600,000 shares of a fiber optic stock, traders at Knight quickly swung into action. A half dozen traders, figuring the big order would push up the price of the stock, quickly began buying some for accounts that benefited their firm and themselves. She goes on to note the buying may have affected the price the client ultimately had to pay for the stock. JDS Uniphase, according to people familiar with the trading records, they say the traders in some cases sold their newly bought stock to the client, Oppenheimer Funds. According to testimony, it was sold to the client at a markup. What a surprise. A move that may have taken money out of the pockets of mutual fund investors. Aren't you just so enthusiastic about giving these folks your Social Security money? It'll just be so cool for Wall Street, of course. But they're the ones who are making the campaign contributions to the Republicans and Democrats who are out there hyping this stuff. So, surprise, surprise, 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent, and caregivers that work for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its co-workers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back.
Michael Levitt, President Bush's choice to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, may have to cut billions of dollars from the government's mammoth health programs for the elderly, poor, and disabled to pare the budget deficit, notes the Associated Press, an article by Mark Sherman. Michael Levitt once was Chief Operating Officer of the Levitt Group, a family insurance firm in which he maintains an investment worth between $5 and $25 million. The company owns 100 independent insurance agencies that sell. Now, get this. Here you've got the guy who's going to be in charge of Medicare, right? He's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And the last Medicare bill that was passed had, remember the donut hole? There was this donut hole in the Medicare bill. You pay for, you know, Medicare pays for the first couple $1,000s, and then there's a $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 there, whatever it was, that they don't pay for, and then after that it's $7,000 or $8,000. This is of drug costs. Then they pick up again and they pay for it. It's sort of like a deductible with a bounce at the bottom. They called it the donut hole. And what it was, many suggest, in my opinion anyway, was part of a deal, perhaps a tacit, perhaps an implicit deal, not an explicit deal, with the American Association of Retired Persons, the AARP, and insurance agents and insurance, the insurance industry. The AARP is very much part of the insurance industry. Much of their revenue, much of their income comes from selling insurance that fills in the gaps in Medicaid and Medicare. And so, you know, if Medicaid and Medicare don't fulfill all of the needs of elderly people who are not well, then there's profits to be made. There's profits to be made. So, Michael Levitt, what did his insurance company, his family, and this, you know, this is worthy of a Piggy Awards. The bigger piggies in their starched white shirts. They always have clean shirts, yes. Michael Levitt, President Bush's choice to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. Family insurance company, Levitt Group, $25 million he owns in. The company owns 100 independent insurance agencies that sell supplemental Medicare policies. Da-da-da! What a surprise. This administration, Ann Veneman, the Secretary of Agriculture, used to be the head of the Cattlemen's Association. No, we don't need any mad cow testing here in the United States. Japan is still going, hey, I'm not sure we want this beef. It's just, can we trust these people? The official slogan of the Bush administration should be something to the effect of, we are the foxes guarding the hen house. Is this what the American people voted for? Assuming that they actually did vote for George W. Bush, and I'm skeptical. Not because I think necessarily that Kerry won and Bush lost, although all of this evidence of fraud in Florida and Ohio and now popping out in New Mexico and other states is starting to make me scratch my head. Here they're doing this recount in Washington State and the 40-vote margin, and all of a sudden they discover, gee, there's 500 ballots here that we overlooked in this Democratic county. Why is it that all of the mistakes that I know of anyway, I don't know, maybe you know of some others that you can educate me about. Actually, there was one. There was one voting machine in one community in Pennsylvania that wrongly, they say accidentally, right, gave John Kerry some absurd, 36,000 votes or something, some absurd thing. It was immediately caught. But every other error that I've heard of, whether it's, you know, not enough voting machines, whether it's machines that are counting backwards, whether it's machines that have lost their votes, it's always done in ways that help George W. Anyhow, let's assume for a moment, just for the sake of argument, that he actually was elected by the majority of people in the United States to be our president for the next 4 years, unlike 4 years ago, when the majority of the people voted against him by a half-million vote margin. Let's assume that he actually got a 3.5 million vote margin this time. And so what did people vote for? Well, according to a study done by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News, they asked, did you vote for George W. Bush to create Social Security investment accounts? To take our Social Security trillions and give them to the high flyers on Wall Street? 51% said, no, he doesn't have a mandate to do that. 35% said yes. Well, how about to constitutionally ban gay marriage? 51% said no. He doesn't have a mandate for that. 41% said yes. How about to nominate conservative judges? 44% no. 46% yes. So, looks like more of the people who voted for George wanted him to nominate conservative judges. To make the tax cuts permanent, 48 to 41 in favor. So now we're getting up into the area where he can claim that this is what people elected him to do. To lead the anti-terror war, 74% yes, 20% no. It's the only thing in the entire poll here. Survey of 1,003 adults conducted from December 9 through 13 with an error, a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1 percentage points, funded by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News. The only item on this list that goes above 50% is to lead the war on terror. Have you noticed him leading a war on terror? Maybe I've missed it. We've got a war in Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11, and about as close to terrorism as Iraq ever got was Saddam sending $1,000 checks to the families of suicide bombers in Israel, which was peanuts compared to what Saudi Arabia was doing. Our good friends, the Bush family friends. Have you seen our ports being secured? I'm not seeing much evidence of that. Are they inspecting cargo on airplanes? No, I don't think so. So, but this is what people think they voted for him for. 74%. In the meantime, back to our Social Security dollars. Somehow you just can't get around this. Here's another one. The first Wall Street Journal. This is from the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. In the first Wall Street Journal NBC News poll since the election, the public, by a margin of 50 to 38%, said investing Social Security taxes in stocks is a bad idea. 50 to 38%. A bad idea. Well, there were no dissenting voices at all in George W.'s carefully choreographed economic summit yesterday. If there had been, you can bet it would have. Who said that? I want to know who said that. Who dared to speak out? First Command Financial Services, writes Diana Henriquez in the New York Times. First Command Financial Services, one of the best known companies, marketing financial products to military families, agreed yesterday to pay $12 million to settle accusations that he used misleading information to sell mutual funds to thousands of military officers over the last 5 years. What? You mean these companies who are handling investments for retirement might mislead us? They're going to pay $12 million to settle the accusation. Now, This is where it just my brain can't get around this. You walk into a 7-Eleven and stick a Twinkie in your pocket and walk out, and they will put your butt in jail. But you rip off the families of our service people, or any Americans, to the tune of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, and they fine you. And you pay that fine out of your profits. NASD and the Securities Exchange Commission said that First Command exaggerated the track record of its high-cost fund products with fees that ate up 50% of an investor's first-year contributions and misrepresented the costs and availability of cheaper investment alternatives. The company neither admitted nor denied the accusation, but accepted the punishment, which included a formal censure. A censure. I remember when we first moved to Vermont. This is about 10 years ago. And this must have been my second, third day here. And the first day that I actually got the local newspaper, we were living in a little town called Northfield. And we actually lived in a little town called Roxbury. But Northfield was the nearest little town to this little town. And we had a Northfield address. And Northfield has a newspaper that comes out once a week. And it arrived. And the front page story, big headline, something like Myrtle Smith engaged in police chase over gas. I'm like, what is this? Well, it turns out that some poor woman, I don't remember her name. I just made up the Myrtle Smith. So all of you Myrtle Smiths out there, don't be calling in. But this poor woman, she went to the local Quick Pick, Minimart, whatever it was, you know, where they got the gas pumps out front. And it had been a flustered day. And, you know, a lot of these machines, a lot of these pumps, you can pop your credit card in and then pump your gas and then just drive away. Or you can pump your gas and then go pay inside. And Myrtle must have been thinking about something else, because she just pumped her gas. She thought she'd run her credit card through the machine, but she had forgotten to. This woman's like in her 60s. Right. And just, you know, a housewife in town. Everybody knows her. I mean, this is a town of maybe, 2,000 people? No, not even that many. And so she gets in her car and she drives off, and the person in the Quick Pick goes out and looks at the car and goes, oh my God, it's Myrtle, and calls the police department, and they get the town cop, and he puts his bullet in his gun, and he goes chasing off after Myrtle. And he didn't actually, I mean, he's rip-roaring up and down the streets. Apparently this chase went on for some time, and he couldn't find her until it finally occurred to him maybe she went home. And so he drove over to her house, and sure enough, there was her car in the driveway with a full tank of gas. And so he goes up, knocks on the door, and says that she is the subject of a manhunt, or a woman hunt in this case. And she's like, oh, whatever for, officer? And he said, you drove off without paying for that gas. And she's like, no, I put my credit card in. He says, no, you didn't. And she's, oh, my God. And so she drove down to the Quick Pick and paid her $8.40 for the gas. And this was the front page story. I mean, this was a big crime. Right? Now, in that kind of a situation, I can see giving somebody a formal censure. But these folks ripped off our service members to the tune of millions of dollars and are preparing, I guarantee you, if not this particular company, certainly this particular industry, preparing to tell you how they can handle your Social Security dollars. Dale in Pennsylvania has some thoughts on this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Dale, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate your work, and I've read one or two of your books, and it's excellent. Just an illustration from, what's the crusading attorney general from New York State?
Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah, when he was prosecuting, I believe it was Merrill Lynch, someone said, geez, why didn't you find them more? And he said in a rather horrified way, that could put them out of business. That's unthinkable.
Yes.
Now, we have a death penalty for real people. Why is it unthinkable to have a death penalty for corporations?
You know, we have a death penalty for corporations. It's called dechartering or decertifying, and it's where you force the corporation to dissolve. They have to sell all their assets and then, you know, pay off their creditors, and if there's anything left over, they split it up among the stockholders. And it was a fairly common event, actually, in the United States of America from between 1787, when we first got the Constitution out, until around the 1890s, 1900, when the charter mongering era started. But it was a fairly common thing, and it even happened quite a bit under the Roosevelt administration, Franklin Roosevelt. Teddy was big into it. But it hasn't much happened, to the best of my knowledge, virtually at all in the modern era. You know, let's say since LBJ, Kennedy, Eisenhower times, hasn't much happened. And we need to go back to it, Dale. You're spot on right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Scientists document the decline of amphibians around the world, and they say the same problem could hit other types of animals in the future. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Amphibians are extremely sensitive animals, and their numbers are in decline. A recent study found that one-third of all amphibian species are at risk of extinction. That adds up to about 1,800 species altogether, and of those, several hundred are headed toward extinction rapidly. The study is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. It was directed by Simon Stewart, a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Stewart says disease and climate change appear to be two particularly nasty problems.
The amphibians have narrow ecological tolerances, and so they are often the first species to be affected by new emerging threats, as has proven to be the case in these declines associated with disease and climate change. If the global environment continues to deteriorate for reasons such as these, and especially if climate change continues, it can only be expected to affect other groups of species that are hardier and more robust.
Stewart uses the word sinister to describe problems that now threaten amphibians. He says they were unpredicted and unpredictable. He says similar problems could hit birds and mammals in the not-too-distant future.
I think as long as we continue to let the basic life support systems of the planet erode, we're going to see more sinister happenings like this. The amphibians are important in their own right, we believe, but they're also a wake-up call for many other things.
The full report is available online. The web address is globalamphibians.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And meanwhile, state governments are already slashing health care for the poor to pay for Bush's tax cuts for the wealthy, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle, whose own state faces an $800 million Medicaid shortfall this year, says Medicaid funding is the number one issue among governors. Tennessee Governor Phil Bredesen has proposed dismantling his state's popular 10-care program due to cost concerns, and Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour has initiated a cost-cutting measure, currently delayed, that could cut up to 65,000 old and disabled citizens from Medicaid. And I can tell you, yesterday I heard on the news that here in Vermont, we're facing a $60 million budget deficit, mostly in the Medicaid program, in health care for the poor here in the state of Vermont. A terrible problem, but we got to figure out a way to pay for these tax cuts for rich folks. You know, the Walton family needs more of that money. Marion in Nevada is with us. Hey, Marion, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the stock market and where we're thinking of putting our money for Social Security. I think that globally we have a misunderstanding that the stock market makes money. It does not. It takes money. The stock market together is an agreement of value of these pieces of paper that supposedly we have claims on corporations for. When somebody buys stock, the money from that stock goes into the market and then is reinvested, and little dribs and drabs of the money go out to commissions and fees to the people who run the stock market.
Yeah.
Eventually, if you take your money out of the stock market, what do you do with it? What happens is that big hunks of money actually come out when we buy things in the stock market. And if you trace the path of the money through this and that, and then other things that big owners of stocks can do with the money, it eventually rests in debt. It comes to rest in the favorite form of debt, which is U.S. debt.
Yeah.
So what
in other words, people move it out of the stock market into treasuries and things.
Well, the stock market is pieces of paper of agreements of value,
yeah.
And yes, it goes in the treasury.
And most people don't realize that when you buy stock, you're usually buying it from another person. It's basically
it's people
swapping back and forth pieces of paper that have a relationship to a corporation. But you buy stock in AT&T, for example, you're not giving money to AT&T.
No,
you're giving money to Ralph down the street who used to own the stock from AT&T.
And if you don't want to buy money or stock and Ralph doesn't want to buy stock, then that piece of paper has no value.
That's right. The value goes down. And there's a consensus around. Marianne, I'm sorry, we've got it. We're out of time, but you make a very good point. And the reality of this thing is that it's more like lottery isn't quite the word, but it's sort of like the Vegas games. You know, the house always takes its stake, win or lose, no matter what. The house always takes its stake off the top. And the same thing with the traders on Wall Street who are giving all this money to this administration.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent, and caregivers that worked for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its co-workers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Who loves you, baby? Merck, the giant drug maker, loves you. That's who? Well, this assumes that you're one of the 230 senior executives at the company. Merck is showing its love to its top executives by giving each of them a brand new gleaming golden parachute. What about the other 30,000 employees? You're on your own. Goodbye and good luck. Those executives might need their parachutes soon, for Merck is in trouble. As widely reported, its best-selling drug, Vioxx, has been found to cause heart attacks in many of those who take it. Not a good selling point. Merck withdrew Vioxx from the market, but subsequent evidence indicates that its executives have known about this little side effect for quite some time, but didn't disclose it to regulators, doctors, or the unsuspecting patients who took the stuff. The company now faces federal investigations and thousands of lawsuits. Since the withdrawal of Vioxx, Merck's stock price has plummeted by 40%, on top of a 30% fall the company had already suffered because of its failure to develop promising new products for the market. All of this makes Merck a likely target for takeover by another drug giant. Takeover threats make top executives very nervous, for the company doing the taking usually ousts the old team and puts in its own. Hence, Merck's sudden rush to provide executive parachutes. If another company takes over Merck, or even buys as little as 20% of its shares in an effort to take it over, the 230 top dogs become eligible to bail out with a special payment of 3 times their annual salaries, plus their expected bonuses, as well as stock payments. For example, CEO Raymond Gilmartin, who helped engineer this sweet deal, would get about $57 million to soften his landing. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, this does amount to top executives rewarding themselves for their own failures and taking care of themselves without regard to the fate of others.
The notion of a 40-hour work week is several hours short of reality. Working long hours is a given when you run your own business. To help make that easier, Sam's Club carries quality 3M products. From Post-it notes to Scotch tape, you'll find a wide variety of the 3M products your business relies on at everyday low costs. After all, we know that time and money are important to you. Helping you make the most of both is why we're here. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can drop, and also archives at tomhartman.com. You can drop into our chat room. Go to tomhartman.com and click on live chat. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which hosts our chat every day. Folks from literally all over the world hanging out there. It's Thursday, the second hour of our Thursday program. It's the time when we traditionally go beyond just the
the New York Times news, as it were, and get into those things where...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Thomas Naylor is a professor emeritus of economics at Duke University, founder of the Second Vermont Republic, and the co-author of Affluenza and the Vermont Manifesto. Thomas Naylor, should Vermont secede, remove itself from the Union?
Most assuredly. I think it should return to its status as an independent republic as it was between 1777 and 1791.
Great. Now, a lot of people, and here we are both in Vermont, but oddly, at the moment, most of the people listening to us are outside of Vermont, probably 99% of them. And most people don't realize, I think, who are not Vermonters, that Vermont is one of only two states, the other being Texas, that were actually independent republics, independent nations, before they joined the United States of America. And we're still operating, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, we're still operating essentially in the same constitution we were when we were an independent republic. Is that not the case?
Yes, with some modifications, but it's essentially the same constitution. You're right.
Yeah. So now, by the way, I have to tell you, if you were to repackage this as we're doing this because George Bush won the election, you would be on Keith Olbermann tomorrow morning, tomorrow night. I mean, the news media would just, you know, go after it if it was packaged as a sour grape story. But I know that you've been working on this for years and years, haven't you?
Well, I've been writing about it for about 10 years, until recently, mostly for an audience of one, namely myself.
Uh-huh. Okay. And why? Here's the resolution, the Vermont Independent Resolution. Be it resolved that the state of Vermont peacefully and democratically free itself from the United States of America and return to its natural status as an independent republic as it was between January 15, 1777 and March 4, 1791. The question, Thomas Naylor, why?
Well, there's several reasons, Tom. At the top of the list is we simply think that that our country, our government, the government has become too big, too centralized, too powerful, too intrusive, too unresponsive to the needs of ordinary citizens and small communities. We also have a lot of concern with the fact that the government seems to have lost its moral authority because it's basically owned, operated, and controlled by corporate America. And then thirdly, in the foreign policy area, we're very concerned about the fact that the foreign policy of the U.S. seems to be based on two underlying concepts. One is full-spectrum dominance, which we consider to be immoral, illegal, unconstitutional, and in violation of the U.N. Charter. And then the second premise of our foreign policy is basically imperial overstretch, trying to be all things to all people. And we simply think that's not only unsustainable, but that the nation has become ungovernable and unfixable.
And both of those latter things are things that from, you know, Washington to Madison and Monroe for that matter, when these doctrines, when these notions of who are we as a nation were really being worked out for the first time, were very clear that this is not the direction that this nation should be going. And historically, I mean, right up to even World War II, I think it's fascinating that it was the Republicans in Congress who were so aggressively fighting against the possibility that Roosevelt might entangle us in World War II. Rex Stout, the author, the creator of Nero Wolfe, published a book back in the 1940s. 1940s, you know, right after World War, maybe it was during World War II. I have it here, but I can't reach it right now, but to check the copyright date. But called The Illustrious Dunderheads, which was a collection of speeches on the floor of the House and Senate, denouncing Roosevelt for thinking about participating in what became World War II. You know, let's just let these folks work things out. There's always been a strong sentiment in the United States against our country getting involved in foreign wars unless there's just absolutely no other choice.
And we've invaded 22 countries since the end of World War II.
Yeah, yeah. So the Thomas Naylor, Professor Emeritus of Economics at Duke University and founder of the Second Vermont Republic, co-author of Affluenza and the Vermont Manifesto. And by the way, if any of our listeners have a question, our number 1-866-889-8894. Thomas Naylor, the reasons that you gave for why Vermont should secede from the United States, are reasons that it seems could be true of any state. In other words, there wasn't something that was uniquely Vermont in there. Well, we've got mountains, you know, we've got to protect them. Or, you know, a lot of people come up here and ski, and maybe they'd rather go to another country and ski. Or we could stop having to pay taxes on gambling or something, or tobacco. Or, you know, I didn't hear anything in there that was uniquely Vermont. Or, you know, we could eliminate taxes on maple syrup and turn it into, you know. Any state could make the same argument that you made, and if every state started making that argument, we wouldn't have a nation anymore. Doesn't that concern you?
Well, I think that you're right, that the reasons I gave earlier are pretty much generic and applicable to any state. And as a matter of fact, at a recent meeting of the Second Republic in Middlebury, 3 days after the election, we issued something called the Middlebury Declaration, whose aim was really to place secession on the national agenda and encourage other states to begin considering this. And it's actually happening. I mean, I was on the radio in Berkeley yesterday with the head of MoveOnCalifornia.org. So there's an emerging California movement. There's talk in Michigan and Minnesota. But on the other hand, the secession movements that have been around the longest are actually Hawaii and Alaska. They're the most developed.
Yeah.
No, I'd have to say, in all honesty, it does not concern me that we could set loose forces encouraging secession, because I think that that our empire is the cause of a lot of evil in the world, and I think the world would be better off if the empire were to dissolve, frankly.
But why not just stay within the empire, as it were? I mean, to acknowledge that label. Some in the Bush administration are actually embracing it, so I guess we can talk about it. To stay within the empire and change it from within, what's wrong with that? I mean, this is historically how we've done it in the United States.
Yeah, it's true, but the problem is that corporate America has such a hammerlock on the Congress, on the White House, that when the government is owned, operated, and controlled by large corporations, and national and congressional elections are bought and sold to the highest bidder, then political reform or campaign finance reform, those are fantasies, because how are you going to reform something when the people who control it don't want to be reformed in the first place?
But we have that same problem right here in Vermont. I mean, we've got a governor, Republican, but Governor Jim Douglas, who's broadly somewhat popular. I mean, he didn't win a majority of the vote in the last election. Not this election, but the previous election when he first became governor, when Howard Dean, you know, stepped down, as it were, because the vote was split between the Progressive Party and the Democratic Party. The majority
right.
vote, but he's positioned himself as a moderate. He's an old radio guy, so he's got a great voice. He does media very well. He's a very savvy politician, but his policies, you look at them on the backside, are very, very corporate friendly, very, you know, aggressively corporate friendly. And I mean, how would separating us from the union do anything other than just give us a wholly owned state subsidiary of IBM rather than a state that's part of a national subsidiary of IBM?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I agree that certainly the Governor Douglas is influenced by large corporations, but I do tend to think of him as much more benign than George W. Bush. But one example of how we could deal with corporations, let's take Walmart, for example, that even though we were the last state, Vermont was the last state to have a Walmart, we kept them at bay for about a decade. We now have four, and we're expected to have five or six more. The reality is, under the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution, ultimately Walmart will prevail against any state in the union.
Well,
Vermont
actually,
and northern state can stop them.
Actually, you know, it's not so much the Commerce Clause, because I mean that can be construed that way. But the main vehicle that Walmart is using is the 1936 Supreme Court decision, J.C. Penney versus the state of Florida, in which Penney said that under the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, the first article of the 14th Amendment, that as a corporation they are a person. Pointing to the Santa Clara County case in 1886,
right.
and as a person, A state cannot discriminate against them. A state cannot favor a local corporation over a national corporation or set up barriers. And so basically the argument that has been put forward by Walmart and others when they invade a state is that if you try and keep us out, you're discriminating, the same as if a black person showed up in a restaurant and you said, sorry, you can't eat here, but white people can. It's the same sort of discrimination. In fact, the 14th Amendment was written to free the slaves.
Extremely well put. Of course, then our point would be, though, if Vermont were an independent nation state, we could shut down Walmart, or we could say, okay, Walmart, you can stay in business, but you're doing a lot of damage to a lot of people in different parts of the state. We're going to impose a specific Walmart tax, whereas as long as we're in the union, neither of those are really our options for the reasons that you stated.
Right, but we could also reverse the reason that I stated by you know, legislatively or through the Supreme Court or by national action. Again, it gets back to the question of why not work at this at a national level and try and take back the United States from the corporations rather than, you know, say we're taking our marbles and going home.
Because I simply think it's impossible, that it really wouldn't have made any difference whether we got Bush or Kerry. That in both cases, the government would have been owned by corporate America, and corporate America doesn't want to change.
Okay, we're talking to Thomas.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and a lot of people think that. Thomas Naylor, Professor Emeritus of Economics at Duke University, founder of the Second Vermont Republic. Is there a website where people can find out more about this?
Sure, it's www.vermontrepublic.org.
.org. And Thomas Jefferson, our quote from the Declaration of Independence, governments are instituted among men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. And a little later on in the Declaration, he said it is the duty of the people. Did he not? I think he did.
Right on.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Thomas Naylor, it's the Second Vermont Republic, vermontrepublic.org. You can check it out on the web. Thomas Naylor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What's the world coming to?
I think they've been putting something in the chat room water. What is it? The chat room electrons? We have Jennifer in there hissing and purring, and Bobby woofing. Oh, you're responding to the small dog yet. I get it. I hope. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Time for our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner with us to fill us in on what's going on in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. There is an economic summit going on here in Washington, but really, Tom, what's going on is baseball. That is what Washington is totally obsessed with. And this Linda Kropp is the city council person who really led everybody on and said, you know, that these negotiations were going okay, and then what happened?
Yeah.
They voted against it, and baseball is nowhere at this point.
Yeah.
And, of course, this has to do with who's going to pay for the stadium here.
That's right. The league, this is the National League, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the league had thought that this team could come to Washington, D.C. from, is it Montreal? I'm sorry, I'm not a baseball fan. You know, I used to be a Tigers fan when I was a kid.
I know nothing about any game except baseball.
Okay, well, good. Then you're the perfect person to talk about. Anyhow, they thought that the city was going to pay all of the cost of the stadium, and now the city council says, you know, we'll only pay half of it. You guys are a for-profit business. You got a bunch of investors. They're not poor people. And we got a lot of poor people here in Washington, D.C. we'd like to take care of first, and so we'll give you 50% welfare on this thing, sort of, you know, which isn't the deal that George W. got down in Texas, is it?
And not at all. Not at all. I mean, he got the sweetheart deal of the election. What did he make, $18 million on it?
Yeah, well, and what they did was they got the fine stockholders and citizens of, I don't know if it was just Dallas or if it was the county or if it was the state or how, you know, what it was, to evict people from their homes, take the land by eminent domain, by, you know, at the barrel of a gun, and build a stadium for free, and let him have his baseball, you know, team have that stadium. And he I believe it was $18 million that he walked away from, walked away with as a result of that. The sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals. And it's not quite that corrupt these days, I guess, with this thing in Washington, but the league not happy. Not happy.
Right.
I
major problem.
Yeah. Sure.
But George Bush is saying that he believes that this is essentially a local issue, and the White House is trying not to get involved in this, but he was excited about baseball coming to Washington.
Yeah. How do you think it's going to resolve? Do you think that the city council is going to give in, or do you think the team is going to go elsewhere?
I think if it does not, honestly, Tom, figure itself out in the next, before January 1st, the team will go elsewhere. The problem is that they're probably going to have to pay in Washington, D.C., play in Washington, D.C. for, you know, this next year because they're out of Montreal. And yeah. They've already agreed to play here.
Well, there's already a stadium there.
Selling.
There's already a stadium there, isn't there?
Well, there's already RFK Stadium, but they wanted to have a new stadium.
They wanted to build a fancy new one so that they could
That's
have
right.
big boxes for the big donors and
big
all those kind of
boxes for yeah. the big owners.
Yeah, yeah. And
you know,
and,
although, I mean, I know you're opposed to these kind of stadium projects. I'm, for lots of reasons, not so opposed. But one of the reasons is that I think that it, Anacostia, which is Ward 8 in Washington, the domain of the former mayor, is absolutely and positively the most blighted area. It could be beautiful. It's right on the river. And
then why don't we just take that same money that would have gone into the stadium and put it into building decent housing?
Well, that's certainly an issue. The will does not seem to be here for that. And the will is spend more money on stadiums. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand where you're going with this.
Yeah, I do. And I understand.
I have some conflict of interest issues myself.
Though. Yeah, okay. Ellen, thanks for the update.
Thanks.
And, you know, keep track of the so-called Economic Summit Council meeting beauty contest thing that's going on there, too. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. I guess there goes Ellen. 29 minutes past the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country, outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent, and caregivers that work for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its co-workers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Walk that walk. Talk that talk. Walk that walk. Talk that talk.
Oops, so back on the air here. This is a typing away in the chat room. And what? We're back on the air. Okay, all right. I'm back here. Here. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Interesting little bit of science news I want to share with you today about stress. You might find this interesting. And China. China is up to something that is giving George W. Bush a bit of a black eye. He's rather upset about. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, let's hear what John in Boston has on his mind. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Tom, hi. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, John?
Great. Your station is great. I really love it. But I wanted to say, you were just speaking about the baseball team in Washington.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a friend that's a school teacher. She's been teaching there for about 20 years. And she said they should not even be thinking of a baseball team with the deplorable condition that the Washington public schools are in.
Yeah.
She said they're just—it's just really devastating to the children to try and learn there because they don't have all of the adequate equipment that they need, the books and that sort of thing.
Oh, I know. When Marion Barry was the mayor back in the BS days before scandal, right? Before the scandal. That didn't come out right. But anyhow, back then, Dick Gregory actually dragged me in there because I had helped start this school in New Hampshire. And I sat down with Marion Barry and with the head of the education department and the head of the prison department, and Fauntroy was there, who was at that time, I think, their congressional representative. And there was, you know, and maybe a half a dozen people. And we spent an afternoon together talking about education and what can be done. And I spent some time in the Washington, D.C. schools. And, of course, I was getting the tour, but it was pretty grim what I was seeing.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely spot on right. And Washington, D.C. has become the poor stepchild of the United States. I mean, they don't even have a vote in Congress.
Wow.
And
that's right. That's right. You know, one other thing I wanted to ask you, too, Tom, before I go. Anytime that you give the audience sort of advice, sort of like you did the other day as in reference to calling the New York Times,
yeah,
we lose your station. I get you over radiopower.org over the Internet.
Yeah.
And then you went off abruptly, and you weren't back on at all, and then a following program came on after your time slot.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they're jamming your station, taking you off somehow, or...
Well, sometimes, you know, on the web state, our webcast on radiopower.org and on CRN, sometimes, you know, just stuff happens. I know that radiopower.org was on the receiving end of some pretty nasty web attacks recently.
It's because they're doing a good job.
Yeah, exactly, in my opinion. And it's all the more reason to click the donate button when you go to the radiopower.org website,
right?
Because what they really need is probably to spiff up their servers, or, you know, actually, I think everything is, you know, doing pretty well, but it couldn't hurt for them to have more resources and a little more redundancy. It would be a great thing. So,
right. Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it, John. I don't think that it was necessarily cause effect, but who knows? By the way, where I thought John was going with that is when you suggest to our listeners that we do something, that you tell us what happened as a result of it. And I did that one day. I guess it was Monday or Tuesday this week. I went on this rant about how if you're concerned about the vote being corrupted in the United States, contact the New York Times and tell them to cover this story. John, here's John Conyers. I mean, this is he's the number two guy in the Judiciary Committee. He's one of the most respected members of Congress, of the entire United States Congress. This guy has been in the Congress forever. He's not a grandstander. He's not a kook. He's a very solid guy. I mean, John Conyers is an impeccable reputation. And he's very thoughtful and very cautious. He's not the type that just, you know, is running around with his hair on fire just for the sake of it. And he's pretty horrified by what he's finding. And why is the New York Times not reporting this? And apparently, a lot of people got in touch with the New York Times because I believe it was yesterday, the New York Times actually reported on it. Granted, it was a little 9-paragraph story, but they reported on it. So it's a beginning. It's a beginning. I have to tell you this thing about stress. This was in Science News, and it's a little off the topic of politics, or maybe not. If you're stressed out by politics, the advice here is, you know, relax, meditate, do something, figure out a way to reduce your stress level. Because here, a new study puts evidence behind the old adage that stressful experiences can give a person gray hair. Scientific data now indicates that prolonged psychological stress might cause a person's cells to age and possibly die significantly faster than normal. And they were looking at telomeres. Telomeres, on a string of DNA, there are these little things at the two ends of a strand of DNA called telomeres. And they're like those little plastic things at the end of a shoelace. You know what I'm talking about? At the very ends of the shoelace, they kind of, you know, so it doesn't fray. And every time a cell divides, the DNA has to divide. It's, you know, it duplicates, and the length of the telomere gets reduced by one. I'm assuming that it's probably, what is it, DNA? Adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine, I think, are the four amino acids that make up DNA. And then one of them, I think it's, what is it, thymine gets replaced with uracil and RNA. But in any case, it drops the last amino acid in the chain. So the telomeres get shorter. The ends of the shoelace get shorter. And then the cell reproduces or divides again. And the telomere gets a little shorter again. And eventually they get down to the point where there's no telomere there anymore. And now the raw end of the DNA is exposed to the environment around it. And that's when the cell dies. So the lifespan of a cell is programmed into it by the length of the telomere, by the length of the end of the shoelace at the end of it, and how often it reproduces. And there is an enzyme called telomerase, I think. I'm not sure it identifies it in this article. I've read it about it at other places. There's an enzyme, telomerase, which helps keep telomeres intact. And there's some really fascinating stuff about aging on this. But here's the bottom line. What they found was that they recruited 58 healthy women between the ages of 20 and 50. 39 of the group are primary caregivers for a child who is chronically ill with a serious disease like cerebral palsy. And sure enough, not surprisingly, these mothers showed all the signs of greater stress than the women who were not mothers of severely disabled children. They measured the telomere lengths in the immune cells called mononucleocytes, collected from blood samples. And they also measured the level of telomerase, the enzyme that maintains the telomeres, that prevents them from breaking down. And here's the study. There is a very striking connection between stress and telomere length. Blackburn reports, mothers who perceived their stress levels as high had significantly shorter telomeres and less telomerase activity than did women reporting lower stress. Cells from highly stressed women resembled cells of low-stressed volunteers who were 10 years younger. Women who reported higher stress also had more free radical damage to their cells than women under less psychological stress. People think free radicals, the result primarily of oxidation in the body, or chemical insult, these are purely has to do with how people eat. Turns out, no. It's what's going on inside your head. And they said this is very exciting research because it ties stress arguably the best cellular pacemaker of aging out there. If we have less stress in our lives, we might live longer. So how do you have less stress in your lives? Well, the old saying, and it's so true, and I would love to see them go a step deeper in this study, and that is that it's not what happens to you in life that really matters. And in the context of stress, it's not what happens to you in life that determines your stress level. It's how you respond to what happens to you in life that determines this. Beethoven, he's probably not the best example, but he was sick all his life. He had terrible intestinal problems. Who knows? It looks like probably he had lead poisoning, just from the food or the water supply or whatever. But he was in pain for most of his life. He and went, of course, deaf. And yet his response to it was to keep on pushing through. And I am convinced, and I remember back in the old days, I mean back in the 60s when I was into TM and stuff like that, you know, all these studies that were done that showed that people who just, take a break, take it easy every day for 10 minutes. And I think this is true whether it's somebody engaging in prayer, in religious ritual, and just hanging out with a significant other, giving or getting a back rub or something like that, or whether it is a meditation or what, reduces stress levels. And guess what? Reduce your stress levels, you live longer. So I thought that was fascinating. China has come up with an interesting new policy. This in today's Wall Street Journal, China has decided to do something new about energy. Let me tell you about that right after. Let's just take a quick call here. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Do you think there's any Pulitzer Prize-winning authors out there that would have the guts to take on the establishment and write a book and call it Not So Blind Trust and expose these maggot plantation conservatives and limousine liberals for what they really are?
Well, I'm not sure. You're throwing a lot of names out there, Armin. What are you talking about?
Or is Gary Webb's tragic ending, a warning to any such effort?
Well,
I'm talking about how these people at the top of the chain that call themselves liberals, limousine liberals, super wealthy, they're only liberal if they can make a buck off the image of being liberal. And the plantation conservatives, they're the ones that move everybody else's job out here and replace them with slaves or bring in low-wage workers.
Yeah.
The maggots of our establishment, I call them.
Well,
everybody got a way to take them on and open up George Bush's blind trust and past presidents and people of high echelons and expose where they got all their investments, all these...
Armin, it's been done. It's been done. Kevin Phillips wrote a great book about the Bush family and where they got their money from and what they're all about. Kitty Kelly laid it out. And as to Mr. Webb, that story's still unfolding. I got an email this morning that said that this guy who committed suicide had multiple gunshot wounds to the head. I have a feeling that's a story that's there's going to be some light shed on it. So we'll see. We'll see. Patrick in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I've had a couple of things I wanted to bring up, that I wasn't sure if you're aware of. I know you read a lot, but, nobody can read everything, right?
Well, I try.
Did you hear about the new Supreme Court ruling on police officers?
No. When was this?
13th.
On the 13th?
A couple of days ago.
Okay, no, tell
me
about it.
They don't have to give a reason at the time they arrest someone.
Oh, really?
The Supreme Court said it was... So that would prevent officers from false arrest lawsuits.
Boy, I don't know how I missed that one.
It's on Bloomberg.com.
Yeah, I'll track it down and we'll talk about it tomorrow. Thank you for alerting me, Patrick. And what was the other one?
The other thing, Alabama, a judge there has embroidered the Ten Commandments on his judicial robe. I'm serious. It's there,
Well, welcome to Alabama. I mean, it's that and Judge Roy Moore and...
Right, exactly. I thought if you hadn't heard about it, I thought I'd bring it to your attention.
If I lived in his jurisdiction, and he's got the Ten Commandments on his robe, I would want to drag in before him the owner of the local movie theater for showing pictures, graven images.
Right.
In exchange for money, no less.
Oh, yeah.
Or the publisher of the local newspaper who has photographs in their newspaper, which are graven images. Or the local tombstone maker, if he puts pictures on his tombstones.
Right.
Let's get some real cases here. It's the first commandment, after all. I mean, it's
yeah.
Interesting. Patrick, thanks for the tip. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
You too. Good to hear from you, and good to hear from you also, Armin. I got to tell you about China here now. China, widely regarded as the world's biggest potential environmental disaster, writes Jeffrey Ball in today's Wall Street Journal, is taking up the new green agenda on global warming. But its primary goal isn't a cooler planet. It's cold cash. Now, get this. China is investing heavily in renewable energy sources. Why? Not because they're worried about global warming, although they say that they're very pleased that they're going to help that problem. Not because they're worried about air pollution killing off their people, although they point out that that's a problem that will be solved also. But because it makes sense. China is implementing an array of tough environmental policies that, if enforced, could significantly reduce the country's emissions of carbon dioxide and other suspected global warming gases. Most notably, China has proposed tough requirements on the fuel efficiency of cars, and within months, it's expected to finalize a law that would make it among the world's highest, biggest consumers of renewable energy. That law would force operators of the country's electrical grid to accept power generation through renewable sources such as the sun and wind. Why? The country's main goal is to ensure itself an adequate supply of energy over the next several decades, say Chinese officials. Chinese leaders are worried about their increasing reliance on foreign oil for transportation. Common sense. Common sense. They're concerned that their country's plentiful coal supplies won't be enough to satisfy China's demand for electricity forever. By crafting new pro-environmental policies, Chinese officials say they hope to channel foreign investment into alternative and more efficient energy technologies. Fascinating. And by the way, the Bush administration is not at all happy with this. I'll share that with you right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Efforts to control air pollution go back several centuries, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Ice cores drilled from Greenland show that air pollution began when humans started smelting copper and iron thousands of years ago. But it didn't become a public issue until the 18th century, when citizen groups formed in London to fight air so black and dirty it made people sick. Joe Sherman says the fight for cleaner air became part of a morality and justice-based movement in England, which then spread to some U.S. cities by the late 18th century.
It was unjust for a lot of people in poor economic circumstances, the same way it is now. In a lot of ways, have not changed at all.
Sherman is the author of a new book called Gasp, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. He traces people's views of air from Egyptian mythology to the present, and he examines how air pollution grew as a public issue. For example, smog began to evoke concern in the 1930s, in Los Angeles, of course. Sherman says L.A. then saw a huge industrial buildup in the 1940s to meet the military needs of a country at war, and the city's love affair with the automobile took off in the post-war boom. By the 1950s, people were protesting L.A.'s poor air quality.
L.A. was like the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the world because the same conditions gradually started to creep all over the place. So we have smog initially in L.A., but then as the automobile culture spread around the world and you had more and more emissions on a large daily basis surrounding cities, you had smog spreading everywhere.
Smog, mostly made up of ground-level ozone, is a public health problem in cities around the world. And it continues to plague Los Angeles. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Working in a coal mine, going on down, now working in a coal mine, about to slip down, working in a coal mine.
And that's, in China, they're relying very heavily on coal. I remember when I was in Beijing in 1986, I spent a month there studying acupuncture at the Beijing International Acupuncture Teaching Hospital. And the air, this was before the economic explosion. And the main street out there out in front of Tiananmen Square, which I would walk by every day, you would see maybe one car would go by every couple of minutes. But the air was, and this was in November, and so it was, people were heating, and the air was just filled with soot from coal. Everybody heated with coal. Anyhow, here's the China, and it's gotten much worse since I was last there. Pressure to enforce new environmental laws is also likely to come from China's neighbors, who are detecting in the air growing amounts of the Asian giant's grit. But could China's desire this? I'm still sharing with you from this Wall Street Journal article by Jeffrey Ball. Excellent article, today's paper. China's desire for foreign investment in alternative energy projects could create friction between China and the U.S. over global warming policy. The U.S. has rejected the Kyoto Protocol and argues the treaty is going to hurt U.S. industry, blah, 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 blah. China's Mr. Gao said his country's new policies demonstrate it is moving to address global warming. Speaking of The U.S. saying that China's a problem, and if we have to cut global warming here, and they won't cut global warming there, and therefore we shouldn't sign the Kyoto protocols because that'll put us at a competitive disadvantage with China. And Mr. Gao says, that is their excuse, Mr. Gao said of U.S. officials. We will show what we are doing. We are taking actions. It's pretty amazing. At the same time, another story in the same page here in the Wall Street Journal, China cracks down on overinvestment in power plants. And they talk about a rise in unapproved plants prompts action to avert electricity glut, bad debt. Tens of billions of dollars of unapproved investments in new Chinese power plants are prompting a crackdown by the central government. Unapproved power plants currently under construction represent 120 gigawatts of generating capacity, twice as much as new plants that have been approved by the government. So what they're doing is they're doing the exact opposite of the Cheney task force. Dick Cheney got together with all these guys, you know, Ken Lay and literally Ken Lay from Enron and others from the oil and gas and coal industry and nuclear industry and said, let's build more power plants. The Chinese are saying, no, let's put solar collectors on people's roofs. Let's put solar cells instead of roofing tiles. Let's put windmills up. And let's have the air clean, and let's not need to import all this foreign energy anymore. Amazing. I suppose, we shouldn't be led by dictatorship, should we?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
In fact, it's a little embarrassing that they're out there ahead of us.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent, and caregivers that worked for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its coworkers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called Amoeba, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call Amoeba, 406-582-1255.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once, buying items you need for your business while at the same time buying items you need for your home. This holiday season, jewelry's best kept secret is revealed. Discover fine quality diamonds at Sam's Club. Whether you're shopping for home or business, count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
He's the man who
corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you.
Interesting. Is there anything better than chocolate? I'm not gonna tell you what Diesel Creek said in the chat room. You can get to our chat room. Go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Drop in. You can drop in as a guest or give an AOL or CompuServe screen name and get in there. The Democrats are embarking on a new venture, you may say. Yes, indeed. This from Andy Borowitz, the Borowitz Report. Democrats embark on fact-finding mission to NASCAR. Ted Kennedy leads delegation on historic journey, boldly going where no member of their party has ever gone before. Key Democratic Party leaders embark today on a historic fact-finding mission to NASCAR. The NASCAR visit, the first ever undertaken by Democratic officials, took place only after party leaders devoted several months of research to determine precisely what NASCAR was. Once we learned, said Terry McAuliffe, DNC chairman, that NASCAR involved cars and racing and apparently had millions of fans, we looked at each other and said, we must learn more. The Democratic delegation to NASCAR, headed up by Senator Edward M. Kennedy of Massachusetts, was then selected by drawing straws, Mr. McAuliffe said. After undergoing a six-week course in NASCAR slang, customs, and rituals, Senator Kennedy and the other Democrats left for their mission in a 40-foot-long plexiglass camper reminiscent of Pope John Paul II's Popemobile. Speaking through a public address system from inside the fortified camper, Senator Kennedy addressed NASCAR fans who had gathered at the Homestead Miami Speedway. "Citizens of NASCAR, we come in peace," boomed Senator Kennedy. "Please join us for a wine and cheese reception before this thrilling contest begins." The Democrats' diplomatic overtures to NASCAR were marred somewhat, observers said, when Senator Kennedy's camper broke down, blocking all access to the Speedway's restrooms. But Mr. McAuliffe still declared the mission a success, adding that the Democrats would soon make historic fact-finding trips to Walmart, Home Depot, and Red Lobster. Elsewhere, doctors examining President Bush said he was in excellent health and capable of assuming the duties of presidency should anything happen to Dick Cheney. Our news you didn't know for the day from Andy Borowitz, theborowitzreport.com. News you should know about. This was literally the top story on the newspaper here in Vermont today, here in the People's Republic. The front page, top, right across the top, big banner. 2004 joins warming trend. The year's just about out, and they've got the stats now. The year 2004, punctuated by four powerful hurricanes in the Caribbean and deadly typhoons lashing Asia, was the fourth hottest year on record, extending a trend that has seen the 10 warmest years ever. That's like, you know, in the history of all the time that they've been keeping track of temperatures. The 10 warmest years ever in the 1990s, a UN weather agency said Wednesday. The current year was also the most expensive for the insurance industry. This is an article by Kevin Gray, Associated Press story. The current year was also the most expensive for the insurance industry in coping worldwide with hurricanes, typhoons, and other related natural disasters, according to new figures released by UN environmental officials. Of course, the coal industry and the oil industry would like you to know it's just a coincidence. That, by the way, from me, not from the Associated Press. Back to the AP story. The World Meteorological Organization said it expects Earth's average surface temperature to rise 0.8 of a degree above the normal 57 degrees Fahrenheit, adding 2004 to a recent pattern that included the hottest year registered in 1998 and the next three warmest since then. The month of October also registered as the warmest October since accurate readings began in 1861, said the agency, which is responsible for assembling data from meteorologists and climatologists worldwide. Scientists have reported that temperatures across the globe rose an average of 1 degree over the past century, with the rate of change since 1976 at roughly three times that of the past 100 years. Now, tell me that's not a trend. In fact, the climate witnesses are speaking about this. This, another story. This is also by Kevin Gray. He must be the guy, the AP guy, who's on the environment beat. This is a story from a few days back that has been sitting in my stack here. I keep wanting to get to it and share it with you because I think this is just fascinating in a kind of morbid way. A Nepalese Sherpa fears his mountain valley will be flooded by melting glacier runoff high in the Himalayas. A Fiji Islander frets about rising sea levels, while villagers cope with the destruction of mangrove swamps in India. This is the byline Buenos Aires, Argentina. As scientists debate whether global warming is affecting Earth, climate witnesses, that's in quotes, told a UN environmental conference Friday that they are already feeling the heat of the changing weather patterns they say are drastically affecting the way of life from the Himalayas to the South Pacific. Panina Mose, a woman from Udu, a fishing village in Fiji, said, "In the past, we just accepted it was the will of God, but now we believe that there could be other reasons." Hang on just a second. Let's get the Exxon on the line. Ring.
Mose, it is the will of God. That's all it is. Just ignore that man behind the curtain.
There you go. Nothing to worry about. It's just the will of God. It's got nothing to do with anything that ExxonMobil might be doing. No. She disagreed. Kevin Gray notes, Mose spoke as delegates from nearly 200 countries sat down in Buenos Aires for an annual gathering by government officials, scientists, and environmentalists aimed at trying to reduce greenhouse emissions believed by many to be causing a rise in the Earth's temperatures. The 44-year-old mother of five, the woman now who is suspecting that maybe it's not just God doing it to us. Somebody needs to talk to this lady. The 44-year-old mother of five said many on her South Pacific island of 400 people are alarmed by recent signs of altering climate. Shortened rainy seasons, eroding close coastlines, dwindling fish stocks, water already in short supply has become even harder to come by, she said. She said, quote, "When it rains, everyone will leave whatever they're doing and rush outside to try and save as much water as possible. We're lucky if it rains for 2 days straight." Environmentalists say her testimony exemplifies what is occurring in some areas affected by global warming and climate change, issues the world has tried to address through the Kyoto Protocol, an agreement requiring initial cuts in greenhouse gas emissions by 2012, that comes into force in February. Anil Krishnamistry, here's another one. A 37-year-old rice farmer living in mangrove swamps along India's border with Bangladesh said he is worried by what he sees as changing climate patterns. He says the region is under constant threat of flooding from heavy rains, and the rising sea levels have washed away huge tracts of land and made others too salty for rice growing. Krishnamistry says, "There were 64 types of mangrove plants in the region, but now half of these species are dying out. The mangrove stands act as a barrier against high tides from the oceans," he said, "but rising sea levels and high tides are making the fresh water salty." He said subsistence farmers are losing rice paddies and freshwater drinking supplies to the rising saltwater tides, and that many try to survive by poaching and by overfishing in the 104 islands in the region. He says, "We're surrounded by water, but don't have a single drop to drink." And then, when are we going to wake up? Right? Another AP story, this about bird extinctions. People say, global warming is killing off some, there are winners and losers in the great global warming lottery. And the birds are apparently on the losing end. About 10% of all bird species face extinction by the end of the century, and 15% more are on the brink. Now, 10 plus 15 is 25. That's a quarter of all the birds on Earth, all the bird species. According to researchers who say such extinctions would have a widespread impact on the environment, agriculture, and human society. You say, well, you know, so I don't see so many robin redbreasts anymore, and I don't see those little chickadees, and so what? I got plenty of crows, that's enough, we got birds. Well, it turns out it's not that simple. Yes, 120 species a day of all kinds of plant, animal, and bacterial life around the world are vanishing, according to E.O. Wilson, the Harvard biologist. And there are people who say, well, you know, look at, for example, Taxol. Taxol is this marvelous drug that prevents the recurrence of breast cancer that was discovered in the Pacific yew tree, E-W-E, the Pacific yew tree, which is a somewhere between a large shrub and a small tree. I believe it's coniferous. I believe it's in the pine tree family. That grows in a small part of, as I recall, Central California. The seacoast area of Central, you know, like around Carmel. I could be wrong on exactly where it grows, but it's been a couple of years. But anyhow, they discovered that the Indians of this area, the Native Americans of that area, for years and years, I mean for centuries, for millennia, had been using tea made out of the Pacific yew to cure breast cancer. So some bright scientist said, let's check this plant out and see if there's something to it. And they discovered that it had a compound in it, which they named Taxol, that sure enough killed breast cancer cells dead. And here's the ironic part. They discovered this within 10 years of the extinction of this tree. The tree was about to go extinct, the Pacific yew. I mean, it was on the edge of it was on the edge of extinction. Another decade, maybe two, and there wouldn't have been any more. And so there are people who say, hey, we would have missed out. We wouldn't have had a cure for breast cancer. But it's much larger than that, really. Important ecosystem processes, particularly decomposition, pollination, and seed dispersal, will likely decline as a result of the lost bird species, says Kagan Seculio of the Stanford University Center for Conservation Biology. Such losses, the team said, could have significant impact on many aspects of society. For example, birds pollinate many plants and plant species and carry the seeds of others to new locations. You know, they eat the fruit and they poop the seed 20 miles away, and that's how plants move around, right? Declines in pollination and seed dispersal as a result of bird extinction may lead to extinctions of dependent plant species, they concluded. Another problem could occur with the loss of scavenging birds that help dispose of the bodies of large animals by consuming the flesh and leading other scavengers to the bodies, a process that helps limit the spread of disease from decomposing carcasses. Birds also eat millions of insects, and a decline in birds could lead to a dangerous increase in damaging pests, the researchers said. But the world's oil and gas companies would like you to know, it's just an act of God.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, high technology for low prices. 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. The Organic Wine Company, 1-888 Eco Wine. And opednews.com, is they have a banner ad there for this Wild Divine game. This is incredible. It's a computer game where you actually hook your computer up to electrodes you put on your body. No, they don't shock you or anything. They measure what's going on in your body and your mind, and you play the game with your brain. And it's a way of, like, you know, training your brain kind of. It's kind of cool. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to share your thoughts on pretty much anything these days. Folks in our chat room discussing what birds do. Remember that old Gary Larson cartoon where there's these two birds on a telephone wire, and they're looking down at this guy who's washing his car right below them. The one bird says to the other, "He's mine." That was great. The world's oceans contain 150 dead zones. I guess it's Environmental News Day. It is important, I think, for us to wake up to this stuff, particularly when we have an administration hell-bent for leather on rolling this stuff back. Well, we'll get to that. But anyhow, the world's oceans contain 150 dead zones, virtually devoid of life. Pollution is to blame. This is from Discover Magazine. Pollution is to blame as excessive levels of nutrients, such as nitrogen, trigger blooms of algae that consume most of the oxygen, suffocating other species. The largest of the dead zones, of the 150 dead zones in the oceans around the world, the largest covers 70,000 square kilometers, according to a report issued on Monday by the United Nations Environmental Program. Another good reason from the conservative point of view for putting the United Nations out of business, they keep telling us about this stuff. What? They have an environmental program? We can't have that. Well, AFP news service, intense storms and hurricanes lashing Latin America and the Caribbean are early symptoms of global warming, said a report delivered at a UN conference on climate change. This is, again, coming out of the same conference. Here's a quote from the study that was sponsored by Mexico and the United Nations. Oh, there they are again. And I quote, increased intensity and frequency of hurricanes in the Caribbean, or Caribbean for those of you who prefer, changes in precipitation patterns, rising levels of rivers in Argentina and Brazil, and the shrinking of glaciers in Patagonia and the Andes. Patagonia? Now, there's a region you don't hear about very often. Patagonia and the Andes are phenomena that indicate the impact that global warming could have in the region, the study said. In one of my books, I think it's Prophet's Way, I wrote about some native people who live in that area. It's the first time I've read the word Patagonia probably in a decade. In the meantime, hear this from the wilderness, from the environmentalcaucus.org, their report from the wilderness. This was actually dated a few days ago, 40 years ago today. This would have been December 12th. President Lyndon Johnson enacted one of the most forward-looking environmental laws in human history by signing the 1964 Wilderness Act and creating the National Wilderness Preservation System. President Johnson endorsed an uniquely American philosophy. American wildlands, untrammeled by industry or machinery, yet open to the enjoyment of all citizens, and that these would possess special values that merit permanent protection for their own sake. The decision to preserve wildlands was without precedent anywhere in the world. It symbolized Americans' deep pride in our greatest national asset, our public lands. Also inspired an extended period of reflection among the nation's historians. Well, now we've got a new plan for them. I'm going to tell you about it right after this.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline. How can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The SEIU announced yesterday that its two healthcare unions in California would be unifying into one massive organization. The unification of Local 399 and 250 creates a union that spans the entire state and is the largest in the country outside of New York State. Sal Roselli, who will be taking the reins as president of SEIU United Healthcare Workers West, says that as independent hospitals continue to be bought up by big companies, the union will also grow.
You know, it used to be that almost all hospitals were independent, and caregivers that work for these independent community hospitals, their whole world was their individual hospital. Well, obviously, with the corporatization of healthcare, that has changed dramatically.
Deborah Kurtman is a dietary aide at Alta Bates Summit Medical Center in Berkeley. The center is owned by Sutter Health, a system that is quickly gobbling up hospitals across California. Kurtman says the unification is a historic event and important for the future of labor.
It will give my coworkers, it will give myself, it will give people in the community a chance to stand up against Sutter Corporation, who refuses, and I really want to stress, refuses to bargain with its co-workers in good faith.
Nurses at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are on strike after failing to reach agreement on a number of issues centering on patient care, wages, seniority rights, and union security. Jim Doherty is president of UFCW Local 655, representing the nurses. Some nurses have reportedly crossed the picket line to continue to work, but Doherty said about 300 nurses braved -7-degree wind chills to hit the picket lines Wednesday morning. Catholic social doctrine supports unions and the right of workers to organize, something Doherty says St. John's management should follow.
I think management is ignoring their mercy values. I wonder where their values are. When they don't care about their nurses, they seem to don't care about their patients.
St. John's is offering 3% annual raises for most of the RNs, but Doherty says the hospital also wants to weaken the nurses' committee dealing with patient care and to undermine union solidarity among nurses. Doherty says the nurses will stay out for as long as it takes to get a fair and just contract.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Think it's hard to make a living in the U.S.? A new report by the International Labor Organization says that of the 2.8 billion people employed globally, almost half live on the equivalent of $2 a day, and over 500 million live on less than $1 a day. The ILO's report states that the world's poverty levels could be greatly reduced by improving labor productivity and creating new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So, hey, there's a new American way. No one's serving those deserving, but there's less tax to pay. We abuse our might and mock the world as we say. Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
No.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
No, I can't sing.
Did you watch the Sunshine State? How the scales got tipped to seal Al's fate? Jeb Bush winked, I told you so.
There's some great bumper music here. It's marvelous. Anyhow, 40 years ago, LBJ signed the 1964 Wilderness Act and the National Wilderness and created the National Wilderness Preservation System. Since the law is signing over 105 million acres of land owned by, guess who? You and me. Citizen-owned lands have been protected as wilderness areas from the towering summits of the Rocky Mountains to the pristine forests of the Pacific Northwest to the biologically rich swamps of Florida. Another 200 million acres of federal public lands may be suitable for wilderness designation, lands with equally stunning vistas, biological diversity, and a measure of the quiet and solitude that is rapidly disappearing as more private lands become developed. However, some of these lands, in fact, all of these lands in one way or another, have some value. And they could be converted into cash. They could be developed. They may have oil or gas under them that could be pumped out or drilled out. They have trees on them that can be cut down and sold. They have minerals. Sadly, with the arrival of the Bush administration, notes the environmentalcaucus.org, the nation's remaining wildlands are instead now targeted for development by the oil, gas, timber, and mining industries. When President Bush came to power in 2000, he stacked his cabinet and federal agencies with industry lobbyists who spent their careers fighting against the protection of wildlands. Say, what? No, this can't be. You mean that George W. Bush would put in charge of protecting our national wilderness people who have spent their entire lives trying to destroy our national wilderness? No, come on. Interior Secretary Gail Norton cut her teeth learning legal tricks from her infamous predecessor and mentor, Reagan Interior Secretary James Watt, a man who actually advocated selling off our national parks. I remember James Watt was being interviewed. This was in
Oh, I forget which year it was now. It was in the late 80s, during the Reagan administration. And I wrote about it. I got a transcript of the interview, and you will find this quote in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Somebody said to James Watt, "Why are you selling off our national park lands at the price and in the way that you were doing it?" Now, in this particular case, there was a bunch of land that had gold under it, and Watt was selling it off to a corporation, as I recall. My recollection on this is pretty clear. Selling it off to a gold mining corporation that was good friends with the Reagan administration, as in campaign donor, for, now, this is where I'm not sure of the amount. It was either $2 an acre or $5 an acre. And, of course, there were millions of dollars worth of gold under this land. But there was this old mining stake law from the 19th century, this obscure law that James Watt resurrected, that gave the federal government the authority to sell land for mining at prices that were set in like 1872 or something. And so for, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars, this corporation bought millions of dollars worth of gold and the land that was atop it. And when James Watt was asked, "Why are you doing this? I mean, they're going to turn this pristine wilderness, this beautiful land, this part of our national parks, and they're going to turn it into a wasteland, you know, because when they mine gold, I mean, particularly when they do the arsenic extraction, where they spray arsenic-laced water over the ore, and it somehow helps separate out the gold. I don't know the chemistry of it all, but the problem with it, of course, is that the waters downstream get contaminated with arsenic. There's a big problem out west right now. And why are you allowing this to happen? Why would you let this happen to James Watt, the Secretary of the Interior? And he said, "Well, you know, it's fine. I can still hear it. I can still remember him saying." He said, "You know, Jesus is going to return any day now, and when he does, he will make all things new." Now, as a Christian, I have to say, I think it would be wonderful if Jesus returned. We certainly need him now. But I am not going to use that as an excuse to sell off the nation's wealth, to sell off our wild lands to corporate donors to the Republican Party. And for James Watt to cynically manipulate, us like that was, in my opinion, just beyond the pale. And Reagan backed him up. I mean, this was a minor furor over James Watt having said this. It was in the press for 2 or 3 days, and Reagan said, "Hey, he's right. Get off his back." Commerce Secretary Don Evans, a lifelong oil and gas man, headed a methane company that's aggressively fighting wilderness designation in the Rockies. Mark Ray, the Undersecretary of Agriculture for Environment and Natural Resources, made his living as the top lobbyist for the timber industry before gaining oversight of the national forest system under George W. Bush. This team of industry handmaidens quickly went to work dismantling the system that allows for wilderness preservation. The first major volley was an undercover of night decision by Secretary Norton to settle a controversial lawsuit with then Utah Governor Mike Leavitt. Leavitt is now chief of the EPA. The Norton No More Wilderness Settlement, as it's called, established that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management may not legally protect wilderness quality lands ever. Norton's goal is to open tens of millions of acres of roadless and wild public lands throughout the U.S. or throughout the West to oil and gas drilling.
Similarly, this summer, Undersecretary Ray killed the Clinton Area Roadless Area Conservation Rule, which had allowed the Forest Service to inventory and preserve wild forest lands while they await a decision from Congress over formal wilderness designation. And on, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's at a certain point, I think we all just go, okay, we got it. We got it. Increasingly, many cities in the West are relying for clean water on flows from these wilderness areas. Some of the cleanest water in the nation originates there. And you know who's pushing back now? I find this fascinating. The group that is now starting to most aggressively push back against the Bush administration and their destruction of wild areas, wilderness areas, are hunters and sportsmen. Similarly, outdoor recreation, hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing are multi-billion dollar industries that depend primarily on protected public lands. So it's I think this is fascinating. And, you know, and then there's always the, you know, there's this Pentagon report that came out this year, early this year, suggesting that global warming could actually produce the next ice age, and it was couched in the context of how is this going to change the way we deal with warfare if suddenly there are hundreds of millions of starving people in Europe. Because there's, you know, the Gulf Stream, it actually originates in the Pacific, it comes around the southern coast of Africa, flows up across the equator, around the coast of, you know, Florida and whatnot, and then out into the Atlantic and hits a point about 200 miles more or less south of Greenland, where it settles down to the floor of the ocean, and then begins the road at the seabed level, begins its path back into the Pacific. Pacific is a little higher, physically higher than the Atlantic, and warmer than the Atlantic. And the temperature of Europe is determined by the Gulf Stream. You know, prevailing winds out of the west, they blow over the top of the Gulf Stream, they pick up heat and moisture. And that's why Europe, which has the latitude of Alaska, has the climate of Tennessee. It's not because of its latitude. It's because of the Gulf Stream. And the Gulf Stream has stopped before when we've gone through cycles of heating and cooling in this earth. And the Pentagon is saying, okay, if the Gulf Stream shuts down, then within a period of a year or two, it'll take about that long for the heat, the latent heat left in the North Atlantic, to dissipate. And then summer will not again come to Europe for thousands of years. It was just like what happened 12,000 years ago. I mean, the last time this ended was 12,000 years ago. There are natural cycles here. We just seem to be speeding them up. And this is, you know, some people think this was what wiped out the Neanderthals ultimately. But anyhow, what are we going to do about this? Because Europe won't be able to grow any food, and there's 800 million people living there. So how do we deal with it? Particularly the fact that a good chunk of those folks, specifically the former Soviet states and Russia, have nuclear weapons. And they might want our food. So the Pentagon did this whole war game scenario based on the Gulf Stream shutting down because of global warming. They hadn't obviously consulted the Bush administration to learn the truth that there is no global warming. Now, let's get your thoughts on this and other issues of the day. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Xavier in Santa Cruz, California, on the line. Hey, Xavier, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a correction. I believe it's not arsenic, but cyanide that they use.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. It's cyanide. Thank you very
and
much.
And I have another point, quick point.
You know, Xavier, it is so cool having intelligent listeners. I really appreciate it. People set me straight all the time, and yeah. It is. I really appreciate
it. Well, I appreciate your. I mean, this is what it's all about. Is not having having a very healthy ego to exchange information without going, oh darn, I was wrong, you know. And I think that's great for you too.
Yeah, well, I'm often wrong.
I'm wrong a lot.
There you go.
But I wanted to ask you another question. I think it was yesterday or the day before. You mentioned something about render unto Caesar.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've been using, and I don't know if I have the complete understanding of it. I think of it as it's a policy of mine. Like, I started a pirate radio station here in Santa Cruz years ago.
Oh, cool.
A number of people.
That's great.
And my feeling was is that, you know, the media wasn't doing the job, so rather than fight them, I just do an end run around them.
Yeah.
And I think that that quote, does it mean, like, give them their stuff and then just go over here and do something else? Or what does it mean?
Yeah, you know, it's been a couple of years since I've read the quote in context, but my recollection was that Jesus was asked basically if his disciples should get involved in political action. And he had asked, whoever had asked him, and it might have been a centurion, I don't recall, but anyhow, whoever had asked him, he said, whose face is on that coin?
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow said, it's Caesar's. And Jesus said, or maybe the guy was asking if he should give this money to Jesus.
I think it was tax.
Yeah. I don't remember the question. I'm sorry. But in any case, Jesus' answer was, render unto Caesar what is Caesar and unto God's what is God's. And throughout the centuries, it's been widely interpreted as a statement of the separation of church and state.
Uh-huh.
And is your pirate? I know we're on a pirate radio station in North Carolina right now. It's they're picking up our
webstream. Yeah, we've been on the air for years, about 10 years now, and we've had the FCC knock on the door a number of times. One time we had a 12-year-old girl answer the door, and the 12-year-old girl asked them if they had a warrant, and they said no. So she said, "Hit the road."
Uh-huh.
It was a couple months ago. We finally got raided. They were down for a month, and I guess they're back up again.
Huh? Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Well, good on you. I suppose I'm not supposed to say that, but
well, that's I understand. But I'll say it.
There you go. Okay, Xavier. Thank you for the call. I don't
have
a long.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you, and good to know that the spirit is still alive out there in California. Let's also stay in the same state. Let's talk to Ed in California. Hey, Ed, where in California are you?
Oh, down in San Juan.
Ah, oh, that's beautiful country.
Yeah. Well, you got Xavier, then you've got me.
Uh-huh.
And then. You know, because you must be totally embarrassed.
Okay.
Knowing that James Watt was right and Watts was right and that Jesus returned 2 days after he said that.
You know, I didn't notice that, Ed.
Oh, he must have, because we're well on the path, aren't we? That's what I meant about me. I'm sorry. But the problem I have is,
you know, it's really tragic, Ed. I take religion and spirituality seriously. And
I know you do.
And I'm just horrified by people who use religion and spirituality to justify basically the rape of this planet.
It's one of the reasons why I can't vote for a fundamentalist anything.
Yeah. Well, there are some ethical fundamentalists. They just happen to be fundamentalists. I mean.
Just very few of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just...
Anyhow, we got about a half a minute before we got to take a break. So you had a point you wanted to make or a question?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that he did come back, and we're well on the path to redemption.
Ah, okay. Well,
thanks, Tom.
From your lips to God's ears, Ed. Wouldn't it be nice? Let's hope so.
Let's hope so.
Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You are in the center of the vast, radical, metal conspiracy. Take no imitations.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers.
Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Sometimes called the Supreme Court of Labor Relations, the National Labor Relations Board has recently made some decisions favoring employers over employees. Rebecca Miles has more.
One agency that's been chipping away at rules concerning workers' rights is the National Labor Relations Board, a board that was created in 1935 to administer the National Labor Relations Act. The act gave workers the right to form unions freely, without being fired or harassed or intimidated, and provided a legal process to those wanting to form unions and get certification. However, the board only adjudicates on cases, and it has been unwilling to enforce rules or inflict penalties when abuses occur. One in three campaigns to form unions usually fail because union organizers are fired even though this is against the law.
What's happened is that the law and the board have become means which employers use to prevent unions from being able to organize.
I asked David Bacon, a labor historian and former labor union organizer, if the National Labor Relations Board was necessary if it lacked teeth.
The board this last year made two important decisions, for instance, which actually took away rights. One of them was the right to have a witness. If your employer is going to fire you or write you up, in the past, you had the right as a worker, even in a place where there was no union, you had the right to call upon one of your fellow workers to go into any meetings with your boss. And the second one is that the board is now considering a decision that says that employers cannot voluntarily recognize unions, that they must go through, that unions must go through this election process, which has gotten so skewed and so out of balance.
For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, and here, Stop Vote Pirates actually found it. And they asked him, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, and neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar or no? In other words, should we pay taxes? And he said, show me a penny, probably a mite, actually, whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar, and unto God the things which be God's. And they said, you know, on it goes. Yeah, the story goes on and on, but yeah, that's it. That's it. Anyhow, welcome back. We don't want to turn this into a class in theology, do we? Let's go to Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I wonder, going back to the mining, wilderness, water issue.
Yeah, it's a big one in your state, isn't it?
Yeah. One thing I want to remind people is everything is downhill from there. The pollution that is formed in Colorado affects L.A. It affects New Orleans. The pollution in Montana contaminates the water supply of Portland. And the mining in West Virginia, the filling into the, you know, mountaintop removal mining where they fill in the valleys, that pollutes the D.C. water supply and the New Orleans water supply.
Yeah.
And actually it goes in the ocean, so it really pollutes the whole planet. It's the top of everything.
Yeah, we're interconnected. Just like the birds dying off means that some plants aren't going to make it. Some insects are going to, you know, get overwhelmed. Everything is going to change, and it may change in a way that is very unpleasant for us.
And there's almost no more critical issue right now. The whole thing of fresh water may be the CIA has reported may be the source of the next major wars in the world.
Yeah, we're running out of water faster than we're running out of oil.
Yeah, we all have to be concerned about this, and we all are affected by something. And what Bush did is they removed an area the size of Maine, as far as wetlands is concerned, from Clean Water Protection, and an area several times the length of the Missouri River from Clean Water Protection, and it flows into everything.
Yeah, yeah, and this is just wrong. And the way to do something about it, whoa, thank you, Jeff, for the call. The way to do something about it is to start at the local level, getting politically active. Tomorrow I got to tell you about what Pat Robertson did back a decade ago and how he did it. It's just a fascinating story. About that, you know, getting active politically locally. Thanks to Louise and Ira for putting the show together here. Brad, thanks to Shelby for streaming us, and Ben for putting us our archives up. The folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening, and to Jay for our music. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for them.